Denne udsendelse er produceret af Mediano Media og præsenteret af vores to partnere, sortesokker.dk. Husk koden Mediano, der giver dig 20% på alle køb. Og af lydbogstjenesten BookBeat. God fornøjelse.
Velkommen til en special udgave af Mediano La Liga. I denne udsendelse, der kigger vi på de fire danske spillere, der til dagligt slår deres folder i den bedste spanske række. Det gør vi for at blive lidt klogere på, hvordan danskerne anskues fra et spansk perspektiv. Det spanske perspektiv, det sørger Dermot Corrigan for. Han er journalist og korrespondent i Spanien for The Athletic. Dermot, han er fra Irland, men han har boet i Madrid i mere end et årti, hvor han har skrevet om spansk fodbold for forskellige medier. Mit navn er Alex Munch-Hjort, og for at Dermot, han kan forstå de spørgsmål, jeg stiller ham, så vil resten af interviewet og udsendelsen foregå på engelsk. Dermot, welcome to Mediano. How are you?
I'm very good. Very happy to talk to you. Thanks, Alex.
Thank you so much. It's a national break right now, but I believe you still have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, well, it's not quite as busy as it has been with all the craziness that's been going on with Barcelona over the last, I was going to say a couple of weeks, but maybe a couple of years. But yeah, it's an interesting international break for Spain because they're under pressure to qualify for the World Cup. They got a break yesterday on Thursday evening when Sweden lost in Georgia and Spain won their game in Greece. But it's still all building up to quite a big game on Sunday down in Seville. So I'm heading down to Seville, to Cartuja to see that and looking forward to it.
Right. And of course, the players we're going to talk to about today also have, in some capacity, all of them have been involved with their national team, the Danish national team, in the last year. And all of them are in contention to be included in the squad for the World Cup next year. Before we look at these players specifically, I would like to get your view from down in Spain on the Danish national team as a whole.
Yeah, quite positive, I think. I'd also say my view on the Danish national team, I'm Irish, so I've had a few run-ins with Denmark over the last couple of years, including some very boring games and some very painful games for Ireland. So a lot of my views may be based on that. But I'd say people would think that Denmark are doing pretty well. Like, very exciting in the Euros, obviously quite traumatic and difficult with Christian Eriksen. But the way Denmark played, especially the style of football that they played, was very entertaining. In some ways, maybe similar to what Luis Enrique is trying to do with Spain, the high tempo, kind of pressing up the pitch, moving forward. So from here, anyway, it looks like Danish football is in quite a good moment.
Right. Do you see them as a team that Spain should, for example, should Spain worry about them for the upcoming World Cup?
Spain would, honestly, I guess my view would be Spain would see themselves as favourites if they're going to play Denmark. But Denmark would be seen as one of those teams who Spain would be expected to beat, but might cause Spain problems. This isn't something Spain haven't played Denmark for a while, we haven't thought about so much, but the way that Denmark play, or from what I've seen anyway, is likely to cause Spain problems because of the way they get players forward. There's a lot of pace in the team down the wings as well. So Spain would be wary of playing Denmark, I'd say, if they got to meet them. They'd see themselves as favourites and expect to win, but it wouldn't be, it could be a tricky one for Spain, and they should be aware of that, I would say.
But of course, they're still years ago, so a lot can happen in that time. Let's look at the players, the Danish players in La Liga, and let's begin with the one who's been there the longest, Daniel Vaz from Valencia. He's been in the league for 6 years. This is his seventh season since he joined Celta Vigo in 2015. He got signed by Valencia in 2018, and he's played there regularly ever since. And he's yet to play below 32 games in a La Liga season, which is quite impressive consistency, I would say. How important is Daniel Vaz to this Valencia team?
He is very important, I think, to the Valencia team. And I remember actually watching when he joined Celta at the start, because that was such an exciting Celta team that were involved in a lot of exciting games against Real Madrid and Barcelona, a lot of high-scoring games. And he always impressed me. How would I put it? He's such a reliable player, such a guy who you could rely on to do the job that you asked him. You know, he's played midfield, he's played wide midfield, he's played full back. But physically, he's always been very committed. He's always got involved and quite technically good player as well. And then since he moved to Valencia, Valencia's been in such a difficult situation over time. They've had players leaving. They've had, you know, there's a lot of problems with the owner of the club, Peter Lim, who's in Singapore. The manager has changed a lot. the fans have been protesting against the ownership. But Voss always seems to provide a decent level of performance no matter what's going on. Again, he's been moved around a lot. You know, he played it right back more because they had a problem in the team that they didn't have another reliable right back more than I think they thought it was his best position. But again, without having talked to him or without having looked super closely at the situation, he always seems to be quite happy, quite committed to the club and eager to help out in the way that he can. And Valencia need that type of player at the minute because it's been so difficult for them. It's been kind of so roller coaster. Like they have the Carlos Soler and Jose Gaya are the two homegrown players who, you know, they've come to really rely on there over the last couple of years. But Voss of the foreign players is probably the next kind of most important, whether not, you know, he's not as, again, not as technically good maybe as Guedes or some of the other players they have, but has been equally as important or maybe even more important to their team to make sure that things haven't got even worse for them over the last couple of years.
Right. Could you perhaps expand a little bit on the problems that Valencia have had over the last couple of seasons? Where are they in the process of rebuilding that great team that they and the great club that they are?
That's such a good question. Like over the last decade or even more, Valencia have been a bit of a basket case. They've had a lot of financial trouble. They were going to move into a new stadium. This is going back like 15 years or so ago. They started to build a new stadium. Then the property bubble burst in Spain. There was financial crisis. The club was being really badly run. It racked up a lot of debts. And so they were in a really difficult situation. The local government got involved. It was super messy. Links with banks went bust. Like a social political kind of study on how not to run a football club almost. At that stage, Peter Lim came in, guy from Singapore, very rich, had been involved in football, you know, friends with Cristiano Ronaldo and Gary Neville and people like that, was seen as a bit of a savior when he came into Valencia first. You know, there was a big welcome for him. You know, he's very close to Jorge Mendes, the super agent. There was a hope that they would sign a lot of brilliant players and get back into the Champions League. For a year or so under Nuno, who's just been sacked at Spurs, they did pretty well. Had some decent players and they got into the Champions League, but it all fell apart quite quickly. I long piece on The Athletic speaking to a lot of people at the club about a year ago, people who've gone very disillusioned with how the club is run. Hasn't been very much investment. There's been a lot of interference from the president, who kind of feels that he knows a lot about football. Been through, you know, maybe 12 managers off the top of my head in 7 or 8 years. Gary Neville was there, Prandelli was there. You know, all kinds of different ideas of how to run football. Then under Marcelino, things went pretty well. They won the Copa del Rey. Voss was involved in that as well. You know, winning a trophy at Valencia was huge for them. They hadn't won a trophy for 13 years, I'm going to say. Then Marcelino fell out with the owners and he was sacked. And now they've gone through another kind of dip. Things seem to be coming back a little bit. Bordalas was the Getafe coach for a couple of years. He was appointed during the summer. He's from the Valencia area. He knows the club. He's connected quite well with the fans and with the dressing room as well. Again, there was rumours over Voss's future in the summer that he might be moving on, but Bordalas seemed to really want him to stay, thought of him as an important player. And again, the results haven't been brilliant for Valencia. It's been very up and down, but recently they beat Villarreal 2-0 in La Liga. You know, it's kind of local derby there. It was a big game for them to win. And, you know, I don't think they're going to qualify for Europe this season, but they won't get relegated either. It looks like a kind of season of consolidation. And again, the type of player that Voss is, I don't want to be doing him down by always talking about how committed he is and you know, how good physically and how much he runs, because he's more than that. But that's the baseline with Bordalas, is he wants those type of players who are physical, who are committed, who are aggressive in his team, and it looks like a decent fit for Voss now there.
Right. But how is he ranked in Spain and in Valencia? I think my question is he perhaps a bit underappreciated?
Yeah, my feeling would be that outside of the dressing room or outside of the core of Valencia fans, he is underappreciated. And maybe I'm even doing him down a little bit by the way that I'm talking about him, because, you know, technically he's very capable player. He gets the ball down, passes it, doesn't give possession away. You know, he's not going to go on on 50 yard runs past a load of players, or he doesn't score that many goals. I don't have the numbers here, but he hasn't scored too many goals for them over the time. But my impression is that within the dressing room and within the core fans around the club, that he really is appreciated both for his ability on the pitch and also for the loyalty that he's shown and the commitment that he's shown through. You know, it's not so easy. A lot of players, especially they come from outside or outside the Valencia area, or they don't know that much about the club, and they arrive and they're a bit surprised at how chaotic it is, and they want to get out of there quickly, or they don't perform very well. But he has been able to put aside the kind of, or it seems to me anyway, put aside the off-field issues and knuckle down to be a really important player for the team, and that's valued for sure.
And you mentioned just a couple of minutes ago that Valencia have been through a lot of managers, and alone in the period that Vaz has been at the club, they've been through 5 managers, and he's played regularly for all of them. What does that say about him and about that consistency?
Yeah, that's the thing with him, is that he's also really useful for managers to be able to do different jobs, because Valencia squad, as well as having lots of different managers, they've had lots of different players have come in and out. Different managers have tried different tactical systems. Some people have been more about a passing football. Other people have been more about high pressure football. But no matter what the manager, whatever, no matter what way the manager wants the team to play, or what shape or system, Vaz seems to be able to find his way into the team. Often, again, I don't have a specific example of this, but the impression I have is that sometimes coaches come in and they don't see him as the most important player in the team, or that maybe he's not always in the team at the start of a manager's reign, but he makes himself very useful to the manager. Doesn't tend to get injured very much either. Tends to be always available, and managers value that and end up finding a place for him, or making sure that he's in the team, whether it is a right back, centre midfield, right midfield, wherever they have a problem in the team. Maybe often Vaz seems to be the solution to that problem.
Right. This versatility, I would like to touch on that as well, because in the Danish national team, he plays the right wing back, but also he can play at the center midfield position. He's probably going to do that tonight because Pierre-Emile Højbjerg is injured. And the flexibility in his position at the national team does that he tends to cut inside, almost playing as a number 10 sometimes. This versatility, how important is it for Daniel that how important is the versatility to his success, I would say?
I think it's been crucial to his success, first at Celta and also at Valencia. The ability to adapt to different positions, to different systems of play as well, speaks a lot to a kind of general intelligence that he has as a player. Anyway, again, I don't know him personally. I've not spoken to him. I do remember he has done some interviews on Spanish TV after games and speaks quite good Spanish, as far as I can remember. But he seems to be a guy who understands the game very well and understands his role. So if he is playing right back, he knows what to do. He's not a... Sometimes if midfielders fill in at right back, they can be a liability defensively. Maybe other teams will be able to get in behind him. But he seems to understand, whether it's that he understands it naturally, or he just has that level of football intelligence, or whether he's very good at following instructions of his coaches, I'm not sure. But having such versatility and being able to play different positions and being reliable in different positions, I'd say has been pretty key to his success, or the way he's been able to prove himself valuable to coaches at Celta and again at Valencia.
All right. Let's move on and take a look at Martin Braithwaite at Barcelona. Probably the most difficult situation to be in. He's injured at the moment, but when he returns, it will be under a new manager, Xavi Hernandez. He scored 2 goals and made 1 assist in the league opener against Real Sociedad. Then 2 games later, he gets this injury and he's been out ever since. Did this injury come at the worst possible time for Martin?
Yeah, for sure. Super, super unlucky for Martin Braithwaite when that happened, because when Barca have been in such a, again, Valencia on a roller coaster, and Barca on a roller coaster as well over the last couple of years, and Braithwaite, because of the way he came into the team, kind of as that emergency signing a couple of years ago when they needed a striker, and a lot of players had left. Messi left last summer. Griezmann had just left or was about to leave at the end of the window, and Koeman didn't really rate him. And Aguero had got injured, and then Aguero came back and is out again. So Barca really, really needed a centre forward. And Braithwaite had come into the season on top of the Euros, where he was really good for Denmark, I thought. And one of their one of their best players in the Euros, maybe you could say, or maybe unlucky not to score more goals during that tournament, and then hits the ground running on the first day against Real Sociedad. Barca, there's an opening there to be centre forward, and to, if he had kept that, you know, not got injured and had scored more goals, then, you know, things could have gone very well. And also for Koeman, not saying that Koeman was doing a good job, or even, you know, I think he couldn't really complain about being sacked, but he was unlucky with injuries to lose all his, or almost all his forwards at some stage at the start of this season, and Braithwaite was one of them. You know, who knows what would have happened if he got a run of games, if the team had picked up a little bit more confidence, had been scoring more goals at the start of the season. It was bad luck all around, really.
And you mentioned this this transfer from Leganés. What is the story about this? It's quite an odd transfer. Is it the closest we can get to talk about an actual panic buy?
Yeah, it is. It's a little bit unfortunate, I think, for Martin himself that he's so associated that he arrived at Barcelona in that way. It came up at March 2020. I might be wrong on that date, but Barca had an injury crisis up front. Dembélé had got injured again. Luis Suarez was also out at the time. So they got permission from La Liga in a bit of an unusual way, but they got the permission from La Liga to sign an emergency striker. And then suddenly they started looking all around and different names. Barca didn't have a huge amount of money to spend as well. It wasn't like Barca have a striker, we're going to look at one of the best players in the world. It was who they could get for the budget that they had, which was around 20 million euros. They went and went for Braithwaite because of the pace he has, the physical qualities he has, and also he had a knack of scoring goals when he was at Leganés against the better teams in the league. He scored against Barcelona, he scored against Madrid, Sevilla as well. So it kind of made sense for them to go for him. It also really screwed over Leganés because they lost their best striker, their most reliable source of goals, and ended up getting relegated that season and haven't been back. So it really hurt Leganés. I don't think that was Braithwaite's fault. He got the opportunity to go to Barcelona. And I spoke to him that summer. I got a chance to do an interview with him over Zoom for The Athletic. And it was really interesting how he had kind of visualized that he would be at Barcelona in the future. Like, not that many people, maybe when he was in France, maybe at Toulouse, at Middlesbrough, at Leganés, you know, not that many people thought, oh, Martin Braithwaite's going to end up playing at Barcelona someday. Mm-hmm. But Braithwaite himself had that idea and had that kind of down as a goal for his career. That's what he told me. And, it made sense just the way he was telling me about it. And it's funny how it ended up working out. But, yeah, good for him. Good for Barcelona in the way that it worked out. Not so good for Leganés.
Right. I would like you to expand on that, because what's the verdict on Braithwaite's career at Barcelona until now?
He's kind of seen, and again, this might be a little bit unfortunate on him, but he's seen in a way as a symbol of the difficulties at Barcelona that Luis Suarez left, Messi has left. The level that Barcelona are acting on in the transfer market, or have been over the last 18 months or so, the financial issues that they have at the club. Again, it's... Braithwaite is kind of a symbol of the fact that they're not operating on the same level as they were before. People like him, like around the dressing room, he's well liked. He's a guy who, or the impression I have anyway, is he's a very intelligent person off the pitch. I know he has lots of business interests and stuff as well. Maybe this is a theme of Danish players, or at least how they're seen here in Spain, but he's a guy who's a rounded individual as well, somebody who makes the best of the situation. And that's how I think the insiders at Barcelona see him, like that. They know that he's not a 30 goals a season guy or a 60 goals a season guy that Barcelona are kind of have traditionally, or over the last 10, 15 years anyway, have looked for their centre forwards. But he's seen as a useful addition to the team. He brings physical qualities maybe that some of the other forwards didn't have. He always works really hard for the team. He's always super committed. And he scored quite a good few goals. I think it's 10 goals he scored. He scored in the Champions League last year when they went to Dinamo Kiev. Again, Barca were in trouble at that stage, and he scored a couple of goals in that game. And again, those goals against Real Sociedad. He's not seen as like a really top quality Barcelona historic striker, but considering the situation and considering the way that he arrived at the club, he's seen pretty well, I think, by the fans. The other thing was by the club hierarchy have also been trying to sell him. If you look at them, he's seen as 20 million euros or something that they might be able to cash in on and get. That kind of been easy for him as well, because him and, you know, a long list of Barcelona players during the summer knew that the club would try and sell them if they could. So I guess that's another way that he has been seen, which has been not so easy for him.
Right. And now in comes this prodigal son, the savior of Barcelona, Xavi Hernandez, hopefully for them. The Danish media has already written Braithwaite off. They've already talked about him possibly being sold and that Xavi doesn't see him as a part of his squad. Does he fit in Xavi's system?
It's going to be super interesting to see. And again, it's unfortunate for him that he's injured. I'm not sure when he's due back. I think it's going to be another couple of months. You might know better than that before he's back. Xavi is very keen on the Barcelona way, La Masia, the juego de posición, the way that they play football, the way they set up the games, the way that everybody knows their role in the pitch. And then maybe to add the plan anyway, or the idea that they have, is then to add maybe two or three world-class players on top of the homegrown players that they have. Right, but in a way, it doesn't really fit into that system because he's not technically, tactically, he hasn't grown up in the Barcelona system. He's a more Danish style of player than a Barcelona style of player. So I can see why people might think that. Plus the fact that, you know, the Barcelona desperately need to sell players to get some money in. You can see why he might end up being pushed out. But what I would say against that is he has shown a real ability to learn and to adapt to situations. His play has come on a lot since he came to Barca, I'd say, or just the movement, the connection with the other players, I think is better or has improved quite a lot. He himself, when I've spoken to him, when I spoke to him, this is, you know, 18 months ago or so, but spoke about how much he enjoyed being at training sessions with these guys. Messi was there at that stage, but with Pique, with Busquets, with the people who understand the Barca way, and he was soaking all that in and he was trying to learn it as quickly as possible. And it does seem that he picked it up. So, you know, Xavi's going to be pragmatic about it as well. He needs pacey players. He's already spoken about how he needs people to play on the wing. I don't know whether Braithwaite, how he would adapt, but they've played a kind of people who, you know, he's played a lot on the wing over his career, I'm pretty sure. So who knows how it might work out. I wouldn't write it off yet. But again, first thing he has to do is to get fit.
Right. Well, let's move on to the newest member of the Danish La Liga brigade. It's Thomas Delaney. Of course, you haven't seen a lot of him yet because he's just joined. So these next players might be a bit shorter blocks of talk, but we'll manage. What are your thoughts on this signing?
I was surprised that Sevilla got him so cheaply in the summer, and I thought it was a typical Sevilla signing. That Sevilla sporting director Monchi looks for these opportunities in the market, brings in players who often are players who haven't been doing so great at their previous clubs and is able to refashion them. Like Lamela came in from Spurs in the summer. You know, long history of Sevilla signing clever players like this. So I thought that he was going to be an ideal signing. Hasn't been so great for him so far. He's played quite a bit, but he's been quite accident prone so far. He got sent off for sarcastically applauding the referee and conceded a penalty for a bit of a silly push in the recent game, Champions League game against Lille, that Sevilla lost and they're in trouble. So it's been surprising. I thought he was going to be would quickly become like a really important player for Sevilla, but he hasn't really settled in yet. He hasn't gone so well for him so far from what I've seen.
No. Do you think that's up to the fact that you need to adapt to the Spanish league, or is it the players that he's rivaling within the team?
Yeah, I'm not sure because like Lopetegui is a super organized coach, has a super systematic way of playing. But I would have expected that anyway, with his experiences, you know, at Dortmund as well, you know, tactically very difficult team to play in, and he seemed to deal with it pretty well with Denmark as well. I'm not sure. Sevilla do have a lot of excellent midfielders. The holder, Fernando, is kind of the king of the midfield, I was going to say. He's super important to them, holds everything together around. And then you've got Rakitic, who's, you know, getting onto veteran stage at this stage, but is, you know, fantastic player still. Joan Jordan, underrated player, hasn't played for Spain yet, but is very, very competent, very, very useful box-to-box midfielder, gets to an awful lot of work in the team and does a lot of, you know, maybe unseen work, but clever work as well. He's good on the ball. He doesn't give it up. So it's hard for Delaney to slot straight into the team. Maybe he's just still getting used to it. Mm. Seville itself is a new city, new culture. It's a lovely place to live. But again, life down there is a little bit different even to in the north of Spain. So maybe he's just kind of getting settled into all those different areas. And that means he hasn't been at his best yet on the pitch.
Right. And you mentioned Fernando and Joan Jordan, his I would say rivals closest to him, because Delaney is not like he's never played that proper six. He's always had like a partner. And then he has played this eight that you said that Jordan also plays. So where's he meant to play for Sevilla?
I'm not sure. Maybe that is the problem. Again, I haven't looked that closely at Seville and how they're evolving this season. I've seen some of their games, but I haven't written about it yet, so I haven't really been analyzing it. But it does seem that they've signed a lot of players recently, and a lot of players who want to play and have their own, who've come in with experiences in different systems and different types of football. And Lopetegui's making a lot of changes. Players are coming in and out, and maybe that's not being so easy for him, and that could be part of the issue.
How do Sevilla look at this season? Are they aiming for the title this season with some sleeping giants who hopefully sleep all season long?
yeah, it's a super opportunity for Sevilla. I think this season, you know, Barcelona in crisis, like 11 points or whatever it is off the top now. Madrid had some decent results lately, but are still very much in transition and so reliant on Benzema and Vinicius up front. And Atletico, defending champions, but they're leaking lots of goals. So Sevilla, last year they were, they came quite close, you know, three, four games towards the end or left in the season. I was at their game at Real Madrid, super, super exciting game with penalties and, you know, just didn't go Sevilla's way that day. But if they had won that day, they would have been right back in the title race with two, three games to go. Adding Delaney, adding Lamela during the summer, thinking that this is going to make them stronger. It means they're going to be more experienced. They have players who have, especially in Delaney's case, have won, you know, trophies, have played a lot of Champions League football, and seemed well set to do it. Champions League for them hasn't gone well at all. You know, losing at home to Lille wasn't good. The results and the performance have been very kind of up and down. But in La Liga, they're well set. So maybe the league is going to end up being the focus for them over the second half of the season. And they wouldn't be favourites, but if the other teams don't improve, then Sevilla do have a decent chance of nipping in there.
Last but not least, we have Jens Jønsson. He's been at Cadiz since 2020, where he's been a regular starter in the team. How are Cadiz doing? It's their second season in the top tier of the Spanish league system. How are they faring?
They're doing quite well. They're doing as well as you would expect, I guess. Cadiz are an interesting team, maybe not the most exciting team to watch. But they're super organized, they're super well drilled, they're super physical, they're not fun to play against at all. They're a little bit like Diego Simeone's Atletico back when before Atletico became, you know, added a lot of more ball playing players and a lot more creative players. Cadiz are quite like a machine. When it works for them, they can get some great results. Like they won at San Mamés, Atletico Bilbao a few weeks ago, or even just last weekend, I think. They were 3-1 up at Villarreal, and Villarreal came back to 3-3. They're just kind of an annoying team, I think, to play against. They don't let you settle down. They're very scrappy. They're very aggressive. They're very efficient with what they do. And from what I've seen of Jønsson, he fits into that really well. He's reliable for them in midfield. The coach likes him a lot. And plays most of the games. They also chop and change a lot in their games, but he seems to come in and play most of them, and it seems a decent fit. You know, Cadiz as a city is quite different. It's like a flamboyant place, a very creative place, a little bit kind of piratey from their past, but the football team don't really play like that at all, and I think that suits Jensen or Jønsson to an extent.
Right. Are they? Would you say they're part of the relegation battle this season? They finished, I believe it was 11th last season?
Yeah, for sure they are part of the relegation battle. Like last year, they came back up for the first time in a couple of decades. They were back to La Liga, and the euphoria of that, the adrenaline from coming back up helped them, and they had a really good start to the season. And then that kind of that meant that they didn't slip down too far and were able to avoid relegation. But their budget is, I'm going to say, 35 million euros. It's one of the lowest budgets in La Liga. You know, for the quality of player they have, for the amount of money that they spend on wages, they should be involved in the relegation battle. So, you know, I think there are a couple of places, a couple of points above the drop at the moment, and that would be a success for them if they were to stay there for the rest of the season. It's going to be a ding-dong battle at the bottom of La Liga as well. Some of the teams like Getafe haven't started very well at all. They've changed their manager already, and they're in trouble. But they have, you know, they have better players man for man than Cadiz, so they would hope to get out of it. Elche are you know, one of the favorites to go down, but they have a lot of they signed a lot of goal scorers, Benedetto and Lucas Perez. So they're it's going to be tough for Cadiz. Granada as well changed the manager. They were in the Europa League last season. They're going to be involved in it. So it's going to be difficult to stay in La Liga this season, but Cadiz have in their favor, they have that they're really well organized, that they have a clear plan. They know what the coach wants them to do. And that means that, you know, I'd back them to stay up, but, you know, it's going to be a battle for the whole season. I'll be pretty sure.
All right. And looking at Jens Jonsson, how important is he to this Cadiz team and to the way they play?
Yeah, he's really important to the coach. Cervera trusts him a lot, plays him. He's one of the first names on the team sheet and plays an important role in the team. He's really reliable. Again, I don't want to go into the kind of cliche of the Denmark players, but it's a little bit how they are seen in Spain, is that they're guys who understand the game, who physically are really good, who tactically are really good, who you're not going to expect to score a lot of goals for each season, but coaches tend to trust them and tend to like them. And Jonsson, from what I've seen anyway at Cadiz, that's how he fits in there, and he's important to the coach in that way.
Mm. And how often is it to see a Cadiz player playing for their national team?
This is something I was speaking to somebody at Cadiz, not specifically about Denmark during this week, but they have a big international focus. They have a lot of players from South America in the team. They like the idea of sending their players out because they have they're looking to grow the brand of the club. Cadiz is, you know, they're back in La Liga for the first time in two decades, but they're quite a forward-looking club. The president of the club used to be at Sevilla, with Monchi, who we mentioned before. They've just taken in some US investment and they're looking to expand. Again, I don't know that much about it. It's something that they're starting to work on, but they're talking of a lot of international expansion, you know, even looking at China for investment and maybe even taking in more international players to look to target different markets. I don't know if that means that they're going to start more promotion in the Danish market quite soon. It sounds quite possible, but it's a good club to be at the moment in that way, in that they're, you know, Cadiz in a good moment. The fans are really behind it. The coach is really popular, and the guys running the club seem to have a set idea of how they want to go about building moving forward to the next stage.
Right. And finally, if Cadiz do go down, do you think Jens Jonsson stays?
I guess that depends on the contract that he's on. Because he came in after they were promoted. He was quite clever signing, kind of a good example maybe of how they're scouting. You wouldn't have expected them maybe to go for him at that stage. But it will depend. All clubs in Spain, when they go down, have to cut their budgets quite a lot. The difference, TV money and sponsorship and everything between Primera and Segunda is quite huge. So that might depend on whether he's willing to do it and what other offers he would have from elsewhere.
Do you think it hurts his chances to go to the World Cup if he plays in the second tier of Spain?
I would imagine so. You know, Denmark have a lot of players playing in top flight and playing for some of the, you know, at Champions League level and playing European football. So again, it would depend on the competition, who else is going for the teams. But you would imagine from his point of view, he'd be much better off being in Primera, playing every week and showing what he can do against Barcelona or Atletico or Sevilla or whoever Cadiz are playing.
Right. Well, this was a very interesting insight into these four Danish players in Spain. Dermot Corrigan, I want to say thank you very much for joining me here today.
No, thanks, Alex. Really enjoyed it.
Også tak til vores partner på La Liga, sortesokker.dk og BookBeat. Husk, at du kan få rabat hos dem begge ved brug af koden Mediano. Tak til alle jer, der lytter med. Mit navn er Alex Munk-Hjort. Vi høres ved.
Udsendelsen, du lige har hørt, var produceret af Mediano Media og præsenteret af vores to partnere, sortesokker.dk. Husk koden Mediano, der giver dig 20% på alle køb. Og af lydbogstjenesten BookBeat, der giver dig adgang til over 200.000 titler via bookbeat.dk/mediano. Tak fordi du lyttede med.
We'll be right back.